A woman lies in a hospital bed, her family gathered around her, but nobody speaks the truth everyone knows. Upstairs, another woman whispers her deepest fear, not of dying, but that her husband isn't ready to face it. In homes across the world, people tiptoe around death with euphemisms and silence, as if avoiding the word might postpone the reality. We've become strangers to something our ancestors knew intimately. Death follows a pattern, as natural and recognizable as birth. For 40 years, palliative care physician Catherine Mannix has sat at countless bedsides, and what she's witnessed isn't the horror we imagine, but something surprisingly gentle, a process we can understand, prepare for, and even find peace within. Death has a rhythm. Like labor progresses through identifiable stages toward birth, dying moves through predictable phases toward a natural conclusion. Yet while expectant parents attend classes, read books, and discuss every detail of childbirth openly, we've relegated death to hospital corners and hushed conversations. This wasn't always so. Throughout most of human history, people died at home, surrounded by family who recognized the signs because they'd witnessed them before. Death was ordinary, woven into the fabric of daily life. The 20th century changed everything. Medical advances moved dying from homes to institutions, and within a few generations, we lost our cultural literacy around death. Today, most people form their understanding from television dramas that show violent, painful struggles, nothing like the gentle fading that typically occurs. The reality? Normal dying is usually more comfortable than normal birth. Understanding this brings immense relief. The gradual slowing of systems, the increasing sleep, the peaceful withdrawal from the external world. These aren't emergencies requiring panic, but natural transitions families can navigate with knowledge and presence. When we recognize dying's familiar pattern, we transform terror into something manageable, even sacred. Sabine wore her French Resistance medal with pride, having faced Nazi occupation with courage. Yet cancer terrified her, not death itself, but unbearable pain that might strip away her dignity. When a hospice physician visited, he offered something more powerful than medication, honest description of dying. Increasing tiredness, longer sleep, unconsciousness, then peaceful breathing changes that gently stop. No sudden pain, no panic. This conversation transformed Sabine's final weeks from terror to understanding. Holly's teenage daughters received this same gift. As their mother lay dying from cervical cancer, an experienced physician guided them through each breathing shift, helping them recognize normal patterns rather than emergencies. The daughters could be fully present, offering comfort through calm companionship, the role of modern death midwives. Joe warned me not to tell his wife Nellie she had cancer, believing knowing would kill her. Upstairs, Nellie confided, "He's just not ready to admit how bad things are." This loving couple suffered alone to protect each other. With gentle facilitation, they finally shared the truth, transforming isolated grief into profound connection. Alexander was a quiet artist and rock climber whose testicular cancer was responding beautifully to treatment. His tumors were shrinking, his family planned future climbing trips. Then, without warning, a massive gastrointestinal bleed struck, a rare complication where shrinking tumors created a hole between his gut and a blood vessel. Despite frantic medical efforts, Alex died suddenly, a dark red python of blood erupting as he took his final breath. The very treatment saving his life had created an unexpected path to his death. Sudden losses carry particular cruelty. No chance for final words, no opportunity to say, "I love you" one more time. Though Alex had once confided he didn't want to see death coming, his family carried the weight of unfinished conversations, a lifetime burden requiring years to process. The psychological whiplash of losing someone during apparent improvement complicates grief significantly. Anticipated deaths allow for resolution, final thoughts expressed, conflicts resolved, presence maintained, creating a foundation for healing that sudden loss denies. The vigil takes many forms. peaceful family gatherings, organized care rotations, reminiscence and laughter, quiet tears, or solitary sitting. These moments stretch from hours to days, each with its own rhythm. Having witnessed countless professional deathbed vigils, nothing prepared me for sitting with my nearly 100-year-old grandmother in the dim hospital nightlight, searching her pale face for clues, analyzing every breath with an intensity I'd never fully appreciated in the families I'd observed. Her breathing became shallow and periodic, pausing before resuming with deep snores that gradually faded again, patterns I'd described to countless families, but never experienced with such heightened awareness. This experience transformed my practice. I became more patient with families' desperate need to know, is she in pain? Is she aware? Is this normal? The last vigil is a place of accountability, a dawning realization of a life's true value, a time to contemplate what connects us and how separation will change our lives forever. Despite modern medicine's machines and medications, these moments remain deeply primal and intimate, an ancient human ritual as old as humanity itself and as fresh as each new loss. Eric, a head teacher with motor neurone disease and 3 years to live, planned suicide before becoming a burden. When paralysis made this impossible, he discovered unexpected joy. His grandsons covered his wheelchair with Batmobile stickers. He could still advise on the garden, play chess, savor whiskey. After choosing a feeding tube and experiencing a magnificent early Christmas, Eric shared, "I wanted to die before something happened that I couldn't bear, but I didn't die, and the thing I dreaded happened. But I found that I could bear it. You weren't saying no to dying, you were saying yes to living." Sally coped differently. Despite overwhelming disease progression, she maintained perfect optimism, focusing exclusively on getting well enough for chemotherapy, having babies, living happily with Andy. Andy compared it to extreme climbing. "Part of my mind knows if I fall, I'll die, but thinking about the danger will only make it more frightening." Neither Eric's acceptance nor Sally's denial was braver. Both found their own path to inner peace. Our silence about death creates real consequences. In emergency rooms, families make agonizing resuscitation decisions without knowing their loved one's wishes. An 82-year-old man with advanced heart disease suffered cardiac arrest. His sons admitted their father had tried discussing his preferences, but they'd refused to listen. Their mother spoke with quiet certainty. "Let him go. He's not living. He's not happy. He often says he's ready to die." We've replaced direct language with euphemisms, passed instead of died, illness as a battle, the deceased having lost their fight. This linguistic avoidance reflects our cultural discomfort with mortality. Reclaiming straightforward language about illness and dying enables clear conversations that reduce fear and allow authentic connection. Familiarity with dying brings lightened perspective, an awareness that everything passes, making the present precious. Folk stories across cultures warn against immortality as a poisoned chalice. Death provides the boundary that makes time and relationships valuable. Dan, a young man with Duchenne muscular dystrophy, transformed from suicidal depression to purpose by creating his emergency healthcare plan. Sharing his experience at a media launch, he inspired others with the same condition, finding unexpected meaning through helping people face mortality thoughtfully. Sylvie, a 19-year-old drummer with rare leukemia, created a memory cushion for her mother's rocking chair using fabric from her own clothes. "It's my way of saying, when I'm not here anymore, come and sit on my knee, Mom." When her numb fingers could no longer sew, she directed the work, leaving both music recordings and this tangible gift to symbolically rock her grieving mother. These stories reveal ordinary people becoming extraordinary as they approach death. By reclaiming death's patterns and vocabulary to discuss it openly, we transform our relationship with mortality. This doesn't eliminate grief or fear, but places them in perspective, allowing meaningful preparation. Acknowledging mortality makes us value our days differently, more intentional about choices, more appreciative of simple joys, more willing to express love without reservation.